Tarkin took a moment to reply.
Your chief area of expertise is crystals.
Synthetic ones. In place of the ones I'm after.
The Kyber,
Tarkin said in a knowing way.
Following up on the original research done by Marsabi?
Galen drew his brows together in surprise.
To a degree.
I'm more interested in what Quata was doing on Mygeto and Christophsis before the war placed them in danger. Tarkin continued to nod.
Zaley had remarkable success in analyzing the internal structure of the Kyber. Do you suspect he and other Separatist researchers might be pursuing his findings?
It's possible.
Might they have succeeded in weaponizing the research?
If they have, the war will soon be over.
If I recall Zaley's theory...
It's flawed. There's simply no way to contain that kind of power.
Suppose
you're beginning to sound more like a weapons specialist than a legal authority.
Galen interrupted.
Tarkin smiled again.
A passing interest. But make no mistake, Dr. Erso, I'm not trying to recruit you. I'm simply trying to determine if Volt's willingness to exchange such a brilliant researcher for two rather ordinary ones wasn't engineered to place you back on Coruscant as a double agent.
Galen sniffed. Finally, we come to the real reason I'm not allowed to leave Coruscant.
What did this Chieftain Grappa ask of you on Volt?
She asked about the Grand Army. Where it came from and how long it was in the planning stages. She asked about Republic weapons, the size of the fleet, the role of the Jedi.
And you said nothing.
I had nothing to give them, even if I wanted to.
Even with your wife suffering as a result. They didn't succeed in turning you.
Galen looked hard at Tarkin. She didn't suffer.
You were prevented from seeing each other.
Lyra is a strong person, with or without me by her side. Perhaps you need to be reminded that it was the Republic that rescued me. If I were a double agent, or whatever you're accusing me of being, why wouldn't I be jumping at the chance to work for the military?
Tarkin didn't speak to that. Instead, he said, as it happens, I know a bit about being held captive.
Galen regarded him with interest.
I spent several weeks in a Separatist facility called the Citadel.
He paused to allow it to sink in.
Were you tortured, Dr. Erso?
No, I wasn't. You were.
Repeatedly.
I'm sorry.
Fortunately, I was rescued before my jailers could do their worst. Had the torture continued, well,
who knows?
The question is, suppose you are allowed to leave Coruscant and once more fall into enemy hands.
I've even less to give them now than before.
Tarkin dismissed it. Wrong! You have something more valuable than military intelligence, Dr. Erso. You have what's in your head, and we want that to stay there.
Galen returned a despondent nod. I have a family to support, Commander.
Perhaps Lyra can find employment in the interim.
Galen allowed his wretchedness to show. That's hardly the point. I need to be able to carry on with my research. I'm at a loss. Tarkin sat back, interlocking his fingers and appraising him.
It can't have escaped your attention that you have a powerful ally in Orson Krennic.
Galen raised his eyes from the carpet. We were acquaintances in the Futures program. Years ago.
It's because of your relationship with him that we have decided not to pursue this matter any further.
Galen squinted in uncertainty.
There will be no inquest or trial. In fact, I'm going to recommend that we close the case on you. You will have to remain on Coruscant until my higher-ups have signed off on this. But I suspect that the process won't entail more than a couple of standard months.
Galen stared.
Months.
He rubbed his forehead.
Still, I suppose I should thank you.
Thank your acquaintance, Dr. Erso. But one more question before you leave. Did Lieutenant Commander Krennic offer you a position or a project of any sort?
No, nothing. In his own way, he simply made the point you've been trying to make. That the war will go on, and every contribution matters.
You don't mind that the war will go on?
Palpatine could have prevented it. Now it's up to people like you to end it.
Tarkin nodded.
And so we shall.
Chapter 10. The Long Calm. The command habitat enjoyed the most all-encompassing view of the construction site. Barren geonosis, the decimated asteroid field and starfields, and the inchoate orb, nurtured and attended to by countless droid and supply ships, its curved superstructure bathed in the rays of the system's flaring primary. After months of traveling back and forth to the surface, Krennic was never so grateful for artificial atmosphere. A party in celebration of the completion of the false equator had been held local weeks earlier, although what had been cheered looked more like an antique gyroscope than an actual sphere. Since then, a few degrees of the upper hemisphere had been outfitted with latitudinal structural members, and rudimentary layout work had begun on cladding a portion of the curved hull. The construction droids could now devote themselves to fashioning the first interior spaces, which, like the equator band, would serve as placeholders until such time as actual cabin spaces could be bulkheaded. Geonosians would be the first to inhabit those immense life support modules. In the wake of Poggle the Lesser's arena announcement, tens of thousands of drones had been transferred to Orbital Foundry 7, the second largest structure in view from the command habitat. Drones there were currently overseeing production of the enormous pie-slice-shaped concavities that, when assembled, would form the battle station's still somewhat perplexing focusing dish or power well. The drone laborers were lorded over by winged soldiers, but both castes answered to Poggle, for whom had been constructed a separate and lavish suite that was linked by a series of tubular connectors to the foundry. Poggle had also been given a beak-bowed ship of limited range that allowed him to commute to the surface. The drones were apparently very unhappy with their situation. They had been promised work on the sphere, and were instead being forced to work only on the components of the dish. Poggle, however, dismissed their frustration as beneficial to the end game of production. Krennic and the rotund Professor Sahali stood with several members of the Special Weapons Group, watching as one of the wedge-shaped components was being tugged from the foundry's gaping hangar. Three of the slices had been completed, and another six were in various stages of fabrication. Almost since the inception of the Strategic Advisory Cell, no one could agree on the ultimate function of the dish, the construction of which was based on a meticulous study of the Geonosian schematic. Early on, everyone involved in the project had been willing to embrace the notion that function was going to have to follow form. Even their new partner, Poggle, had admitted that the Stalgassen Hive hadn't had time to design the weapon before the Battle of Geonosis had curtailed their research. The plan, in any case, called for assembling the dish in space and maneuvering it by tug and tractor beam into the gargantuan well that had been framed into the sphere's upper hemisphere, the dimple, as some referred to it. The parabolic dish also had to be engineered to telescope away from the hull to facilitate the aiming of the composite beam proton superlaser some of the special weapon scientists were proposing. It continued to puzzle Krennic that Count Dooku hadn't attempted to launch a preemptory strike on the construction site.
how had the fact that the battle station schematics were in Republic hands remained a secret? The thinking was that Dooku was too busy working on his own version to worry about what the Republic was doing. In that sense, the project was less about achieving parity than winning the race and being the first to deploy the weapon. Construction, assembly, and installation of the dish should have been shouldered by the project's structural engineers. But because the dish was considered to be crucial to the station's principal weapon, oversight had fallen to Krennic, who was still in the midst of trying to make good on his pledge to bring Galen Erso into the mix. He had been pleased to learn that the Justice Department had opted to drop the espionage charges he had arranged to be leveled against Galen. What he hadn't planned on was Galen's being interviewed by Willoth Tarkin, who had subsequently taken a strong interest in Galen's plight. Krennic didn't know Tarkin well, though they had met briefly during Tarkin's stint as governor of Iriadu, Tarkin's homeworld. The title governor had stuck, even though Tarkin had since served as an officer in the Republic Navy. Everything about the man told Krennic that Tarkin could be trouble. It was no secret that he enjoyed a close relationship with Supreme Chancellor Palpatine, and that he was fairly worshipped by many of his former comrades in the judicials. The only reason Tarkin hadn't been drafted into the cell on day one was that he had been imprisoned in a separatist facility, from which he had either been rescued or escaped, thus amplifying both his popularity and his cachet. And there were rumors to the effect that Tarkin had been instrumental in convincing Palpatine to move forward with the battle station, even that he had had a similar weapon in mind even before the discovery of the Geonosian schematics. Serving nominally as Adjutant General for the Navy, he was rapidly being brought up to speed on the status of the battle station. And there was talk among the members of the Inner Circle that Tarkin was being groomed to assume leadership of the entire project. Krennic bristled at the thought of having to report to Tarkin, and reasoned that netting Galen was going to be the only way to avoid that. But having that card up his sleeve was different from knowing precisely when to play it. Staring at the pie-shaped piece of dish, Krennic mulled over Poggle's production philosophy of forcing the drones to perform work that was beneath their skill or caste level as a means of increasing their ultimate output. And an idea came to him. Why didn't Coruscant have more actual staircases than people movers? Lyra asked herself as she wound through the throngs in the central district. It was impossible to get a good workout in a place where she could barely raise her heartbeat, let alone break a sweat. Not on a world where the atmosphere and climate were regulated, and artificial gravity was provided at the summits of the tallest structures. Despite the trouble she and Galen had found themselves in on Vault, Coruscant, even with the threat levels, the false alarms, the real possibility of surprise attacks, was simply too safe. She needed wind and rain, cyclones, quakes, and the threat of avalanches. Unpredictability. Natural forces at work. She had lost the weight she'd gained with Jin, but was getting soft after all the months of waiting around for the situation to change. In the months before she and Galen had departed for Vault, she would often sky-cab to the Jedi Temple grounds and exercise there, basking in the energy of that elegant sight, surrounded by a nexus of the Force. Once events leading to the war had begun to ramp up, however, the grounds became heavily patrolled and the atmosphere changed. Now you couldn't even get near the temple without having a high security clearance. Had the war affected the Jedi's ability to feel the Force on Coruscant, despite the world's superabundance of sentient life? Were the battles on remote worlds somehow disrupting the Force? The idea was too frightening to contemplate. Lyra tried to hurry her pace. Exercise was so ingrained in her that she needed it as much as nourishment. but there were simply too many beings in her way. Changing course, she ducked into a transit corridor that ended at the southeast corner of Lantern Plaza, where she at last found some breathing space. Like Galen, she was an only child. Unlike him, she still had a mother, alive and making ends meet as a fine artist on Aria Prime. Her mother had had to take out loans to finance Lyra's education, which Lyra had paid back by wearing a weighty holocam and hiking on worlds where the terrain was too rough for survey droids, or the costs of employing them prohibitive, to provide 3D video for various holonet providers. Later, she had worked as an environmental impact specialist and a surface verification agent, positions that had eventually led to jobs as a cartographer and a survey team leader. By the time she was 29, she had visited 5 of the 50 wonders of the core, 6 of the 30 wonders of the mid-rim, and 12 of the 25 wonders of the outer rim. She had visited several legacy worlds, environmentally protected worlds in remote regions, but she had yet to travel through the inner core, venture into the western reaches, or penetrate more than 50 parsecs into the unknown regions. So many places to see. Marriage had never been part of the plan, to say nothing of a child. But being pregnant with Jin, especially while in captivity, had made her aware of the Force in a way she imagined the Jedi experienced. A profound connection with life that went beyond mere understanding. And while she supported Galen's research, she was secretly glad that he was no longer attempting to synthesize or create facsimiles of kyber crystals. One might as well try to clone the Force itself, or turn to magic in an effort to simulate the power. She swung a quick turn into an alley and began to jog before being brought up short by a group of yammering droids bent on enticing her into a holo theater. As much as she appreciated being out of the apartment, she wasn't enjoying the freedom as much as she had hoped. It was as if she had forgotten something important. That something being Jin, who on approaching 19 months old was beginning to chat up a storm and display an early defiant streak. Lyra, thrilled at being able to open Jin's mind, but in fact she felt like she was learning as much as she was teaching. Maybe the days of feeling entirely on her own were long gone. As she ambled through a densely crowded shopping district, she tried to recall the last occasion she'd had free time. That would have been several months earlier, on the night of the future program's reunion, when Galen had gotten into that dreadful dust-up. Dagio Belkos had contacted him a few days later to apologize, blaming alcohol, and Galen had forgiven him. But the Itachi's accusations had stung and lingered on in the form of gossip about what had happened on Volt. Lyra's support of Galen's decision to avoid military research remained steadfast, but they were now on the edge of falling into serious debt. Worse, Galen was restless and miserable, though he managed to hide his discontent from Jin, whom he had nicknamed Stardust. Orson Krennic, among others, had promised to find some sort of position for Galen, but no one had come through. Lyra had proposed going to Aria Prime the moment Galen's travel ban was lifted. They could live with her mother, and perhaps wait out the war there. Meanwhile, the conflict was escalating. The worlds of Malastair, Seleucumai, and Mon Calamari now in the thick of it, and wherever Lyra ventured on Coruscant, she felt as if she was under surveillance. The war had brought tens of millions of refugees to Coruscant, many of whom, in the absence of employment opportunities, had been forced to live in hopelessly overcrowded relocation centers. Just that morning, the Holonet News had carried a report about a separatist cell that had been exposed on Coruscant, with several members captured and others killed. Then there was the cryptic message that had appeared on the screen of her personal comlink one morning from an unknown sender, reading simply, "It's not too late for him to change his mind." Did the hymn refer to Galen? Had it been sent by separatist or even Republic operatives? Had the gossip surrounding Galen given birth to it? Was it perhaps from Adjutant General Tarkin, who had actually befriended him? Though the message might have been meant for someone else entirely, it had rattled her. She had stopped to look over a window display of hiking shoes and gear when she noticed for a second time the Rin she had spied earlier while absently appraising a collection of jewelry. The Rin were a species of itinerant humanoids with white hair and prehensile tails, but it was only the fact that Rin were such a rarity in the Corps that had compelled her to fix on his reflection in the glass. This one was wearing fur boots, a flat cap, and a long red coat. And here he was again, a long distance from when they had first locked eyes. Lyra's danger senses came alive. The Rin didn't look threatening, but she didn't like being followed. Quickening her pace, she blazed a twisting trail through the crowds, catching a turbo lift just in time to ride it up three levels and another in time to descend one. Stepping out, she glanced furtively in all directions, certain she had given him the slip, until she spotted him again, approaching her out of nowhere with his long-fingered hands buried inside his coat. Glad now that she had left Jin in Galen's care, she turned and raced deeper into the crowd, then darted into an alley, only to find him coming toward her from the far end. Spinning on her heel, she started back the way she had come, and was amazed to see him in front of her. A swift look over her shoulder confirmed her suspicions. There were two of them, identically dressed and now closing on her from front and rear. Whirling again, she searched for something she could use as a weapon, as a call for help in that area wasn't likely to draw much more than a passing glance. Were they after valuables they wrongly assumed she carried, or was she facing an abduction, or worse? Were they agents of whoever had left the inscrutable comlink message? As the pair of Rin converged, she steeled herself to do what damage she could with her fingernails and feet.
"There's no getting away from us," the one in front said in tone-perfect basic. "We'll make it easy for you," said the one behind.
Both of them had their hands hidden, and when they were a meter away, they opened their long coats to reveal cleverly designed displays of rings and necklaces, earrings and bracelets. Lyra stared in open-mouthed surprise and relief as one of them held up a scintillating pendant, saying with a sudden, quiet sibilance,
"Pretty lady, this one has your name on it."
Galen had just finished reorganizing his research notes and was about to check on napping Jin, a rarity in the Urso household, when the apartment comlink chimed, and when he took the call, a quarter-scale hollow presence of Orson genied from the projector. The signal was shaky and noisy, and Galen began to fiddle with the controls in an attempt to stabilize the vid feed. Orson appeared to be doing the same at his end of the transmission, and ultimately, Galen had to downsize the projection to 1/8 scale. As the comm had obviously been routed through an incalculable number of relay stations, the source code was impossible to determine.
"Where in the galaxy are you?" Galen asked after a long moment of adjustments.
"Far from Coruscant."
"Clearly. An engineering project?"
"Massive," Orson said.
He was in uniform and standing in front of a ship's viewport.
"On an unprecedented scale."
"Military?"
"What do you think, Galen?"
Galen's curiosity was piqued.
"An orbital facility, or in deep space?"
"A bit of both."
Galen sensed that that was as much as he was going to get by way of explanation.
"I'm glad to hear that someone is gainfully employed."
"And how have you been spending your time?"
Galen combed his long hair back with his fingers.
"Going stir-crazy."
"Lyra and the child?"
As good as can be expected under the circumstances. You heard what happened with the Justice Department?
I've been briefed.
It seems I have you to thank again for my not being imprisoned.
The entire case was without merit. Baseless accusations. I tried to make that clear to Adjutant General Tarkin, but he insisted on launching an investigation.
Actually, he's been very sympathetic. His hands are tied in terms of rescinding the travel ban, but he's helping in other ways.
I wouldn't put much stock in what he promises.
I won't, but he's my only hope right now.
As it happens, he's not. That's why I'm contacting you. I may have found a position for you.
Galen could scarcely believe what he was hearing.
It's not much, but it could end your deadlock.
Not military.
Nothing of the sort. You've heard of Helical Hypercom?
Galen tugged on his lower lip. They manufacture personal comm devices.
HH has a large production facility on Lokori. Right now, they're attempting to produce a crystal array to better serve remote areas where communication relays have fallen prey to the war. The Republic is contributing to the research production, as the devices will benefit many struggling member worlds.
Multitasking, Galen called up a galactic map while he listened. Lokori is near Ryloth.
Not the most secure destination just now, but well fortified.
This is unexpected, Orson, Galen said. Of course, I'd have to review the current research and production.
Director Herbane can send you whatever data you need, assuming you're interested.
Director?
Roman Herbane, COO or some such title. You'll answer chiefly to him.
Galen fell silent.
I realize that it must seem like a backward step for someone of your accomplishments, but isn't there some phrase about sometimes having to take one step back to take two steps forward?
Galen found his voice. It's just that I've grown accustomed to supervising my own research and being my own boss.
I don't want to put you in a situation you'll regret, Galen.
You're not. You're not.
HH will probably leave you to your own devices in any case. Besides, you can consider the position temporary until something more aligned to your talents and interests comes along.
Galen thought about it. I'll need to discuss this with Lyra. She's been suggesting we relocate to Aria Prime once the travel restrictions are lifted. Her mother's health is failing.
Whatever you think best, of course,
Orson said. Galen looked at the map. Lokori.
By all accounts, a very interesting world, with a much more agreeable climate than Vault.
When does Helical need a decision from me?
Well, the sooner the better.
Galen blew out his breath. I've never been good with spontaneity, Orson. Do you have an opinion?
My opinion is that you accept the offer. I'll use my influence to make certain you're allowed to leave Coruscant and return to work. Even work of a sort that's beneath your station.
Galen nodded for the comlink holocam. You're placing me further and further in your debt. I don't know how or when I'll be able to repay you. Orson smiled.
At some point, I'll show you the plans for what I'm working on. And you can tell me what you think.
Chapter 11. Mundane Science.
Lyra hadn't researched Lokori. On Coruscant, she had mentioned the planet to a few friends, but had stopped listening when they went into detail. She wanted to be surprised, to be put off her guard. She wanted to be intrigued. She had showed Jin a couple of images of where they were headed, but aside from having spent those few months on Vault, the entire galaxy was new to her. Even with Krennic's influence and some assistance and encouragement from Will of Tarkin, another 3 standard months passed before Galen had been able to extricate himself fully from bureaucratic red tape. Then, all at once, they were done. Oaths and contracts had been signed, affidavits delivered,
permission to travel granted, apartment sublet. And the next thing they knew, they were aboard a passenger ship bound for the Outer Rim, their fares paid for by Helical Hypercom, Galen's new employer. He hadn't told her much about the new position, but Lyra had checked into the company and found it to be above board, with a good record of contributing to worthwhile causes. The passenger ship shuttle was descending now, and she had her face pressed to the cool, transparent steel viewport. The capital city of Fucalpa looked like an enormous flower bed, riotous with colors and shapes. Her gaze took in basket-like structures and spiked domes like outsized succulents. Buildings climbing in off-kilter segments with stairways wrapped around them like clinging vines. Residential areas that might as well have been horticultural farms laid out like lobed or pointed leaves. The indigenous species, also called Locori, were stalk-like insectoids with stemmed eyes, vestigial wings, and elongated hindquarters, from which at one time had extended a second pair of reverse articulated legs. What struck her from the start at Spaceport Immigration and Customs was the Locori's intrinsic graciousness, evidenced by a to-and-fro motion of the head based on a religious ritual that signaled greeting and gentle acceptance. The locals were immediately enamored of Jin, whose powerful legs were now carrying her far and wide and whose vocabulary had tripled. A Locori representative of Helical Hypercom met them outside of customs and showed them to a company landspeeder large enough to accommodate everyone and their few pieces of luggage. Galen had been quieter than usual during the journey from Coruscant, and as Lyra observed him, she knew instinctively that he felt out of his element and unsure. But when he turned to her, perhaps sensing her sideways scrutiny, he smiled.
"What do you think so far?"
"If it's all like this, I'm good," she said. "Better than good."
"What about you, Stardust? Are you having fun so far?"
Jin nodded, then began to bounce up and down on the speeder's bench seat in a show of enthusiasm. Or maybe she was just picking up on Lyra's obvious hopefulness. In either case, Galen looked at her lovingly and reached behind him to take her hand. The landspeeder meandered through well-tended streets, coils and curlicues, spirals, arcs and circles. No grid for Fucalpa. Arriving finally at Helical Hypercom's headquarters, which was lackluster and industrial-looking by comparison. No effort had been made to mimic the local organic architecture. Plus, it was surrounded by walls, interrupted only by security post entrances. Inside the cubicle main building, Locori graciousness was replaced by unsettling servitude and a grim sense of duty and obligation. They were left to wait in a stark room with uncomfortable furniture and bland art adorning the walls. At long last, a human woman entered, introducing herself as Roman Herbane's executive secretary. Her long hair was pulled back severely from her high cheekboned face and tailed halfway down her back. She wore a shimmer silk sheath tailored to accentuate a shapely figure and stylish boots that added centimeters to her height. The smile she forced at Jin made it seem as if a human child was something new to her. She led the three of them into an expansive office whose windows overlooked a range of thickly forested hills limned against a teal sky. Herbane was seated behind a large desk, and it seemed to Lyra that he stood only when it occurred to him that he probably should. His expensive suit and sharp-featured face gave him a patrician look. Lyra sensed that Herbane and his secretary had more than a workplace relationship. Galen introduced himself, then Lyra and Jin. Herbane's handshake was cool and curt. When he eyed Jin with what almost seemed suspicion, she picked up on it and decided to hide behind Lyra's legs.
"I hope the journey was pleasant enough," he said,
adopting the same smile his secretary used.
I hate connecting through the Dipic hub. Such despicable beings, the Toydarians.
Lyra started to say that she found them to be very friendly, but she thought better of it.
The trip was fine, Galen said. Uneventful. Uneventful is very good these days.
Urbane glanced around.
I should offer you a beverage.
Galen waved off the rote proposal, and everyone sat down except for Jin.
Well, then I assume you've had a chance to review the literature. It would be helpful if you could hit the ground running.
I did, Galen told him. You never said if you had had a chance to look over the notes I sent.
Urbane fidgeted.
Yes, those. To be honest, Dr. Ursa, I couldn't make sense of most of it.
I'd be glad to go over them in detail.
Urbane gawked at him.
You would, you?
Look, let's get something straight from the start, shall we?
I'm well aware of who you are and of your various accomplishments in your field. But I've no interest in hearing your theories or engaging in experimentation. We're not reinventing the rocket here. We have a job to do, and that's all there is to it.
Galen's expression was quizzical.
Even if that job can be done more efficiently or accomplished at a reduced cost?
Just as I expected,
Urbane said, putting his hands flat on the desk.
To be blunt, I was against hiring you for this very reason. I expressed as much to my superiors, but you obviously have some very influential friends who convinced them to ignore my concerns and ordered me to accept you. I've put long years into this work, and I don't want any trouble. I'm certainly not going to engage you in a battle of wit or intelligence. But for all your scientific papers, degrees, and patents, you're the one sitting there, and I'm the one sitting here.
Galen merely shrugged.
Normalcy has taken leave of the galaxy.
Urbane's jaw dropped a bit, and he looked at Lyra.
Is your husband always so confrontational?
He speaks his mind, Lyra said.
Urbane turned back to Galen.
We're embarking on a dangerous course, Dr. Urso.
I don't think so. I just wanted to say that Helical is wasting money using pontite crystals when synthesized relicite would do. Production costs could be halved and bandwidth doubled.
Urbane continued to stare at him.
You're actually going to argue with me your first day on the job?
I'm not arguing with you.
Galen tried to make clear.
I'm speaking as one colleague to another.
Urbane's face flushed with anger.
I'm not your colleague, Dr. Urso. I'm your boss. Helical Hypercom is not Zerpan Industries. We're not researchers, we're providers. And I need you in quality assurance. Unless you feel you can confine your theorizing and speculations to your personal time, I suggest that you save us both a lot of headaches and return to the core.
I'll ask you just this once, Dr. Urso. Can you be a good soldier or not?
Soldier,
Galen said, closing his eyes.
Worker, employee, however you need to frame it.
Urbane continued.
It's a simple question.
From the frying pan to the fire, Lyra told herself. She restrained an impulse to touch Galen or send him any kind of reassuring message. The job was his choice, and she was determined to stay out of it. Jin was squirming behind her, exhausted. Lyra only realized that she was holding her breath when Galen let his out.
Tell me what you want done.
Time passed slowly at Geonosis. The only way to relieve the tedium was to shuttle down to the surface, which in fact offered no relief whatsoever. An hour in the heat and stink and the orbital facilities felt heaven-sent. Krennic had had weeks when he was just trying to get through it.
The last of the pie slice dish modules had been fabricated, but the dish itself was not yet fully assembled, and the upper hemisphere well was still undergoing finishing touches. Droid work on fashioning cabin spaces in the pole region had also gone much more slowly than anticipated, although a few were fully sealed and habitable, providing work for at least some of the thousands of Geonosian drones who had been ferried upside. Galen, in the meantime, was ensconced on Lokori, where Krennic suspected and hoped that he was even more unhappy and frustrated than he had been on Coruscant. But Krennic viewed the dead-end job with helical hypercom as guidance of a sort, a means of directing Galen to his destiny. He had wanted to have Hass-Ovid transport the Ursos to the Outer Rim, both to keep the Dresselian on the leash and to have him serve as a listening device. But Obit was suddenly nowhere to be found. And in the end, Krennic decided it was best for the family to travel by passenger ship, as normal nobodies would. He was preparing to contact Galen when his young aide barged into the officer's mess. Lieutenant Oyanta was a tall, pale human with coal-black hair and eyes with epicanthic folds.
"We've got a problem in the Level 1 first-stage enclosures," he began. "The drones are dying by the dozens."
Krennic wiped his mouth with a napkin and stood up.
"Did engineering run pressurization and atmospheric checks?"
"All systems are good."
Krennic shook his head in perplexity.
"Then what's the issue?"
"It seems there's not enough work for all of them."
"Not enough? Ugh. First, Poggle frustrates them by ordering them to perform grunt work. Now he pits them against one another for what work there is?"
"Poggle claims to know what he's doing."
Krennic worked his jaw.
"It was Poggle who insisted on bringing them up the well before we had work for all of them. How serious is this?"
"Security is warning that the situation could get explosive. There have already been several incidents."
"What sort of incidents?"
"Marines had to draw down on a bunch of drones who refused to follow orders. The enclosures are a mess of blood and guts."
Oyanta showed his data pad.
"I have video."
"Save it. I just ate."
Krennic gestured to his empty plate.
"Why aren't Poggle soldiers overseeing them?"
Oyanta's shoulders heaved in a shrug.
"They're standing down."
Krennic grew angrier as he spoke.
"This is a security matter. Why am I being dragged into it?"
"Apparently, sir, you're the only one who can reason with the Archduke."
"The only one willing to talk to him, you mean?"
"And more or less the reverse."
"All right," Krennic said, resigned. "I suppose I'd better make the call." The two of them exited the mess and set out for the Habitat's communications room. When at last they had succeeded in raising Poggle aboard his shuttle, Krennic positioned himself on the holoprojector pad and faced the cam.
"Archduke, we're having a problem controlling your workers," he said. "They're fighting over tasks and refusing to obey orders, and your soldiers might as well be on vacation."
The Geonosian hollow presence betrayed no emotion.
"I see no problem,"
he replied in his native tongue.
"They're dying, Archduke, by the dozens."
"Geonosians do not hold life to be as precious as you humans do, Lieutenant Commander. Perhaps you have forgotten how many drones died during the eve of Mechjin Festival."
"How could I forget?"
"That was just for sport and entertainment. Work is a much more serious matter."
"Then why aren't you intervening?"
Poggle's wings stirred slightly.
"To derive the most from them, you must be willing to abide their need to compete for tasks."
Krennic glared for the cam.
"What are you telling me? That we should just let them fight and die?"
"That is precisely what I'm saying. Rest assured that I absolve your security forces of all culpability should they be required to kill them.
That's very regal of you, Archduke. But how about offering a solution for not having to exterminate our labor force?
Poggle gestured in haughty dismissal.
Add to their number and allow them to work it out themselves.
Blaring klaxons in the headquarters building cut short the impromptu lecture Galen had been delivering to some of his Locori co-workers. He imagined that Roman Herbane would be chagrined to learn that Galen's job of overseeing quality assurance was normally so mindless and repetitive that he had nothing but free time to think and theorize. His equations and words hung in the air as everyone raced to reach the underground shelters.
Mathematics isn't just science, it is poetry. Our efforts to crystallize the unglimpsed connections between things. Poetry that bridges and magnifies the mysteries of the galaxy. But the signs and symbols and equations sentients employ to express their connections are not discoveries, but the teasing out of secrets that have always existed. All our theories belong to nature, not to us. As in music, every combination of notes and chords, every melody, has already been played and sung, somewhere, by someone.
It was the second surface attack since he and Lyra and Jin had arrived. Most of the conflicts were being settled out past Locori's moons, but Separatist dropships had once again penetrated the Republic picket line and entered the atmosphere, releasing squadrons of reconfigurable vulture droid fighters. Fortunately, the Hypercom production facility was protected by an energy shield provided by a massive but well-protected shield generator situated in the nearby hills, and the labyrinths of service corridors beneath the prosaic buildings were used as evacuation shelters for the entire western district of Fucalpa, including the mostly foreign neighborhood where the Ursos and many other HH employees were housed. In the midst of the earlier raid, Galen had fortuitously run into Lyra and Jin, and had passed a trembling couple of local hours with them until the all clear had sounded. It was all the worse because of their growing fondness for Locori. The sound of clippers and pruners at work on building facades, substituting for the incessant sound of stone chisels Galen had heard on Vault. He was in search of Lyra and Jin again when the bombardment began in earnest. From the chatter in the tunnels, he learned that the defensive umbrella was taking a thrashing. At a holo station, he stopped to watch real-time 3D video of squadrons of vultures and tri-fighters targeting the shield with concentrated fire in an attempt to overwhelm it, while closer to the hills, Republic batteries were doing their best to prevent other fighters from reaching the shield generator itself. The sky was fractured by pulses of raw energy, loosed by the reciprocating turrets of the big guns. Unsuccessful at finding Lyra, Galen retraced his steps through the maze to where he had separated from his co-workers.
Is there some equation that can put an end to all this, Dr. Erso?
One of the shaken insectoids asked. Galen set himself down on the floor to join him.
If sentient beings were moved by the same laws that govern nature, there might be. But as we've come to embody entropy, I don't hold out much hope.
A second Locori countered.
Surely the Jedi have unlocked the secrets of reversing chaos and will be able to outwit nature at its own game.
The Force derives from nature, Galen said somberly. Against such chaos, even the Jedi are capable of accomplishing only so much.
Chapter 12. A Cog in Something Turning. Jarred from sleep by the clamorous chirps of his personal comlink, Krennic reached for the device in the dark, thumbed it active, and heard the equally strident voice of his adjutant.
Sir, we have a full-scale riot in the Level 1 enclosures,
Ollanta said. Krennic spit a curse through his bared teeth.
I thought we were done with this. What's their issue now?
We can't figure out what started it. One moment it was business as usual, the next the drones were destroying all the work they'd completed.
Destroying?
All 3 months' worth, sir. And they're still on the warpath. Even the Marines can't contain them.
Krennic shot to his feet. Meet me at the comm station and raise Poggle's ship. With any luck, you'll be waking him up like you did me.
I'm on it, sir.
Ordering the lights to come up, he threw some water on his face, stepped into his trousers, and hurried from his quarters. Incident-free months had gone by. The battle station's parabolic focusing dish was nearing assembly. Hull cladding had been added. Interior spaces had been bulkheaded and made habitable. Living conditions for the drones had also improved, and every attempt had been made to limit overcrowding. Even the Archduke had been especially accommodating. Though when not relaying commands to his soldiers, he had confined himself aboard the shuttle with his private contingent of workers. And now this. Krennic was at a loss to explain how things had been thrown out of equilibrium. Had separatist operatives infiltrated saboteurs into the workforce? His young aide was pacing in front of the unstaffed comm station when Krennic rushed in. Following a brisk salute, Ollanta gestured wildly to the console.
Sir, traffic control reports that the Archduke shuttle has left orbit.
Krennic wasn't sure he had heard him correctly.
Left orbit when? About the time the riot began.
Krennic bent over the console to scan the monitors. He had assumed that the shuttle was bound for the surface. Instead, he saw that it was outbound from Geonosis.
Do you have him on the comm?
He barked over his shoulder. Ollanta gestured again.
Loud and clear.
Krennic enabled the hollow feed and swung to the mic.
Where do you think you're going, Archduke?
He asked in Geonosian.
I'm sorry to be leaving, Lieutenant Commander, but I have an important engagement.
Whatever it is can wait, Poggle. Your workers are dismantling everything they put together.
The Archduke feigned sympathy.
Try not to be too hard on them. They are simply following my orders.
Krennic's thoughts raced.
Your orders? Have you lost your mind? Get your sorry carapace back here on the double.
Poggle stood tall in the hollow feed, his wings slightly extended.
I required a diversion sufficient to occupy your security forces while I engineered my exit.
Krennic muted the audio and turned slightly toward Ollanta.
Calm the flotilla, Commander. Order him to draw bead on Poggle's ship.
Ollanta saw to it while Krennic disabled the mute.
What's the nature of this important engagement? Who exactly are you meeting?
My comrade, Count Dooku.
While Krennic was absorbing it, Ollanta said,
Captain Friss has the shuttle in target lock.
Krennic grinned for the holocam.
I'm going to give you an opportunity to turn around now and make things right, Poggle. Otherwise, you'll be in pieces before you clear the asteroid belts.
Poggle approximated a smile.
Ah, but thanks to your cordiality in providing me with a private retinue of drones, I have full confidence in my ship. You see, while my soldiers were helping you with the battle station, my drones were making significant modifications to the shuttle. I suggest you watch your displays, Lieutenant Commander Krennic.
Order Friss to open fire, Krennic said.
While he was switching to an exterior view, he saw Ollanta's mouth fall open.
What is it?
Negative engagement, sir. The Archduke's shuttle.
has jumped to hyperspace.
Galen and Roman Herbane were at it again.
I'm only suggesting that power could be diverted from the production plant to shore up the overtaxed shield generator, Galen was saying. That will allow us to enlarge the footprint of the defensive umbrella to encompass a greater part of the city itself, perhaps all the way from the western outskirts to Ambu Square and most of the historic center.
I won't even consider it, Herbane said from behind his desk.
Diverting power will cripple production.
You're assuming that the facility will survive. More to the point, we owe it to the local population.
Herbane's face wrinkled in derision.
I've heard word that your wife has all but adopted a couple of Lokori from your neighborhood.
What of it?
The locals have already been well compensated for allowing us to produce here, Herbane said. During the most recent election, they were given the chance to vote, to raise a shield that would have protected the entire city. And instead, corrupt members of the administration decided to refurbish the town hall and their own offices.
So don't lecture me on what we owe them.
The air raid on Lokori had never really ended. Over the course of 4 local months, it had waxed and waned. Day and night, the skies above Fucalpa bore evidence of the hard-fought battle in near space. Where the planet had been reinforced by elements of the Bright Nebula fleet, the Separatists had matched the Republic ship for ship. Time and again, Fucalpa was rocked by flights of suicidal droid fighters, which had resulted in thousands of civilian casualties and the devastation of countless buildings.
A defoliated garden,
Lyra had lamented. She and Jin had been relocated from Helical Hypercom housing to a safer area well inside the perimeter of the defensive dome. The homey surroundings to which they had just begun to accustom themselves exchanged for the sterile confines of a dormitory at the edge of the company's now seldom used landing field. Even without being able to airlift product, Herbane had demanded that work continue without interruption, so much so that the warehouses were beyond capacity and shipping containers were stacked all over the grounds. Rumors circulated of an imminent evacuation of all non-resident personnel at the first instance of a let-up in the fighting. But pauses had been so few and far between as to render escape a greater risk than simply hunkering down and trusting that Republic forces would eventually prevail. Standing on the visitor's side of Herbane's desk, Galen adopted a more conciliatory tone.
Has Helical ordered you not to divert power? Or is the decision yours to make?
I don't see how that's any of your business, Erso. Tens of thousands of lives are at stake.
A massive explosion close by overwhelmed Herbane's reply. The two of them watched from the window as black smoke coiled from the hills and the translucent shield doming the facility began to shimmer and fade.
The shield generator has been destroyed, Galen said in a quiet voice. We're all vulnerable now, Roman.
Stricken, Herbane stared at him, seemingly unable to speak.
In the hallway outside the office, Galen ran into one of his co-workers, who told him that the Republic picket line had been dealt a crippling blow. Landing craft had been scrambled to deliver Grand Army companies to the surface, but Separatist troops were already on the ground. Even now, a battalion of battle droids was marching on the city, annihilating everything in its path. Galen ran off in search of Lyra, whom he found moments later with a helmeted Jin jammed into a back carrier and gazing over her mother's shoulder. Lyra grabbed a large backpack by the straps and passed it to him.
The battle droids landed east and north of the city center, she said in a rush. That means our best option is to head south into the hills. With the shield generator destroyed, the Seps aren't likely to care about that area. Jin and I have walked most of the trails through the draws that access the ridge. It's an easy climb, and once we're over the top, we can pick our way down to the basin on the far side. There's plenty of good water and small game there, and places for shelter. We have enough food to last for 2 standard weeks, possibly longer if we economize. The rainy season won't start for at least another 3 months, and by then, Lokori will be retaken by the Republic, or we could be forced to surrender to whoever's in charge.
Sounds like you've thought of everything, Galen said.
You know better than to say that.
Galen shrugged into the heavy pack and they set out, snaking through the labyrinth of underground tunnels and gradually working their way up to the surface and into the streets that radiated out from the facility. Outside of what had been the defensive dome's coverage, the destruction was widespread and heartrending. Smoke billowed into a smudged sky, and distant explosions shook the ground. Thousands of Lokori crowded the streets, many of them similarly burdened with packs and supplies. And Lyra wasn't alone in wanting to head for the hills. They hadn't gone more than a kilometer when the river of refugees was forced to a sudden stop. Word from up ahead trickled back that a phalanx of battle droids was advancing from the west, and so the living stream shifted southeast. Panic began to mount. A trio of Republic landers raced overhead, taking heavy fire from hastily installed Separatist batteries. Galen watched as two of the ships sustained direct hits and were reduced to fiery debris, white-clad bodies plunging to the ground. Farther along, they came upon a squad of clone troopers deploying from a carrier that had managed to land.
"There's no exit in this direction," one of them said, waving a gauntleted hand. "All of you need to fall back to the factory."
Lyra shook her head at Galen.
"No way, right?"
"No way."
They swung south again. A handful of the insectoids accompanying them, skirting the line where other clone troopers were beginning to dig in and negotiating a clogged alleyway that opened onto a winding highway. They were running now, Galen winded, his legs burning, Jin silent in the carrier and holding on for dear life. The sky was filled with tracer rounds, red pulses of energy and blinding explosions. Soot and particles filled the air, and the day grew dark as the sun was eclipsed by smoke. Galen wrapped a moistened kerchief around Jin's face. The sound of repeating blasters came from their right.
"Battle droids!" Galen said.
They turned and ran, only to encounter another dozen of the bipedal monstrosities directly in front of them, marching in step with black blasters raised. They cut left and increased their pace, running flat out and breathing hard. Lyra began trying the doors to storefronts they passed, but all were either locked or blocked by piles of organic debris. Battle droids appeared in front of them again, then behind as they swung around. Blaster fire whizzed through the air. Lokori left and right of them fell to the street. Protectively, Galen hugged Lyra from behind, Jin whimpering with her face pressed to her mother's back. Lyra dug her booted feet into the base of a slippery debris pile and began to scamper for the top, where it looked as if they might be able to access the leafy roof of a conically shaped building. Galen followed, his work shoes churning in the organic fall, and by the time he caught up to Lyra, she was shaking her head. The pile simply wasn't high enough. They stood together at the base of a sheer wall, 4 meters high, without ledges or toeholds, and with nowhere to go. Below, battle droids advanced from both ends of the street, killing the few Lokori that remained standing, painting the street green with their blood, and joining forces at the bottom of the fall. Everyone Galen and Lyra had run with was on the ground, dead or wounded. Galen looked down to see one of the droids gaze up at them and communicate something to its brethren. The droid's feet weren't well suited to climbing mounds of organic rubble, but they tried nonetheless, and on realizing they were getting nowhere, they raised their weapons. Galen's thoughts spiraled. Placing himself in front of Lyra and Jin, he lifted his face to the darkened sky and screamed,
"Is there no escape from this madness?"
All at once, as if his voice alone had spawned a miracle, the droids began to power down. The entire city fell so unexpectedly silent that Galen was as discombobulated as he was comforted.
The central command computer, he sputtered, his eyes leaking tears. Republic forces took it out. That's the only explanation.
Lyra pressed herself against his back while Jin cried softly in the carrier. I don't even need an explanation. What neither of them knew or could have known was that the war, so abruptly begun 3 years earlier, was just as suddenly over. Chapter 13. Kyber Crystal Persuasion. Fresh from the Corellian shipyards, an Imperial Star Destroyer reverted to real space 1,000 kilometers out from the battle station. Because of whom it carried, the ship had been cleared to travel from the core to Geonosis without having to be granted clearance at Sentinel Base, parsecs distant in another star system. Aboard was Emperor Palpatine, said to be recovering from wounds suffered during an engagement with disloyal Jedi. Traveling with the Emperor was a new addition to the court, a being known only as Darth Vader, masked and caped, clothed in head-to-toe black, and evidently feared by many. But Krennic had to wonder, Vader's eccentric fashion sense notwithstanding, if he was really any more formidable than now Grand Vizier Mas Amida. Of greater importance to Krennic was that Willef Tarkin was also known to be aboard the Star Destroyer. Krennic suspected that the reason he himself had been left off the elite passenger list owed to Poggle's escape, even though the Archduke was now apparently dead, along with Count Dooku and the rest of the Separatist leadership. Gone, too, were the Jedi generals in their homespun robes, armed with lightsabers and the Force. Krennic continued to monitor the approach of the Star Destroyer from a bay inside the command and control habitat. If nothing else, he had at least managed to get the focusing dish installed in advance of the Emperor's visit. He watched as a shuttle emerged from one of the capital ship's hangars, hyperspace capable and as graceful as a long-winged bird of prey. The war had been won without the battle station. Now, however, it was to be put to different use, to eliminate the chance of future conflicts by instilling fear in the hearts of those who would seek to threaten the integrity of the Empire. And yet it still lacked the one special ingredient that would transform it into the weapon it was always meant to be, and to elevate Krennic as a result. Galen Erso. Galen had been sorry to learn that Roman Herbane had lost a limb to blaster fire during the final battle on Lokori, and that his executive secretary had sustained fatal injuries. Herbane could easily afford a synthskin prosthesis, but Li Tan would not be so easily replaced. For all the arguments Galen had had with him, Herbane had simply been a victim of his own stubbornness, lack of foresight, and limited intelligence. Even so, Galen sympathized with the grief the man had to be experiencing. The memory of the confrontation with the battle droids continued to haunt him. Helical Hypercom had asked him to consider replacing Herbane as chief operating officer of the production facility, but Galen knew that he lacked the skills necessary for administrative work. More, he yearned to return to pure research. By contrast, he and Lyra and Jin had grown fond of Lokori, and the offer from HH was tempting. Galen told the president of Helical that he needed time to think about it, and had asked for a brief sabbatical. They were on their way to Coruscant to consider plans for a permanent move to Lokori when Krennic calmed, asking that they divert briefly to Kanzai, where he promised to rendezvous with them. He assured Galen that the additional travel expenses would be covered by the Empire. The Empire. The galaxy was still reeling from the events of the past few months. The war ended. The Jedi Order disbanded, eradicated by some accounts. A new and expanded military established to reinforce the limited shelf-life clones who made up the Grand Army, and ex-Supreme Chancellor Sheev Palpatine as self-appointed emperor. Galen, Lyra, and Jin were waiting in the atrium of the Orona Hotel on Kanzai when Krennic marched into the majestic space, dressed in a crisp white uniform and command cap, insignia squares shouting his rank from the tunic, a small contingent of Imperial stormtroopers moving in his wake. An alloy case dangled from his left hand, its pulsing light indicating to Galen's sharp eye that it would open only for Krennic himself. Once they had exchanged pleasantries, he led them toward a private room he had reserved. Pausing briefly in front of a mural, three Bith artisans were laser etching into a wall of polished stone. The hairless, dome-headed, black-eyed humanoids were working from a detailed drawing that recounted the history of the Republic from inception to empire, with a cloaked and cowled Palpatine occupying the crown. Krennic motioned the Ursos in, and the stormtroopers fell into guard formation outside the door. While Jin roamed about inspecting the room, Krennic placed the case on a table where he could see and read his coded rank insignia. The case emitted an audible click and whir, unlocking itself, but Krennic left it closed, folding his hands atop the lid. "I understand that Helical Hypercom has offered you a permanent position," he said to Galen.
"I'm supposed to be thinking it over.
I hope you plan to turn them down."
"It would be a living," Galen said. "A very good living, in fact."
Krennic laughed, eyeing Lyra, then Galen.
"Since when do you two care about credits?"
Galen didn't join him in laughing.
"Well, I have something better to offer in any case."
Galen and Lyra traded wary looks. "Let me explain," Krennic said.
"Now that the war is winding down..." "Winding down," Lyra cut in. "It's not over?"
Krennic rocked his head.
"Pockets of resistance remain, especially on Umbara. Our forces are engaging in several, shall we say, pacification exercises to bring about a lasting peace. The Emperor has made reparations and reconstruction a priority. And one way he hopes to achieve this is by being able to provide sustainable energy to worlds that have suffered on both sides of the conflict."
He gestured with his chin to Galen.
"Even your own Grange."
Lyra's brows quirked in a sign of doubt.
"This is the same Palpatine who couldn't get anything done as Supreme Chancellor?"
Krennic stared at her.
"He defeated the Separatists." "With a lot of help."
Krennic dismissed it.
"As Emperor, he can accomplish what the corrupt pre-war Senate wouldn't permit. Project Celestial Power is his vision. His dream."
"Just how is he planning to implement Project Celestial Power?"
Galen asked.
"To begin with, he has allocated funds for a research facility on Coruscant, which is already under construction in the Bancor Refuge."
Lyra let her surprise show.
I thought the refuge had been granted to the Bancora in perpetuity."
Krennic smiled thinly.
"The Bancora have been relocated."
"This research facility is the better offer you mentioned?"
Galen said.
"It is. What do you think of the idea?"
Galen exhaled through his nose.
"I guess it depends on how I would fit in."
"Fit in?"
Krennic said, laughing again.
"Why, the Emperor is hoping that you'll accept the position of Director of Research." "Galen, it's precisely the project you approached me with more than a year ago. Your dream, as well as the Emperor's."
Galen turned to Lyra in complete astonishment.
"Galen!"
"Orson, I don't know what to say."
"But you'll say yes if you know what's good for you."
He reached across the table to clap Galen on the shoulder. Then, smiling slyly, he rapped his knuckles on the lid of the case.
"I've something here I suspect will serve as a major incentive."
Lifting the lid, he spun the case so that Galen and Lyra could view the contents. The objects in the case caught the light of the room and refracted it in shifting colors into their eyes. Lyra's hand went to her mouth.
Are those
Kyber crystals?
Galen completed, as if struggling to articulate the words. And many, many more where these came from, Krennic said. In fact, now that the Jedi have been disbanded,